A major league team in a major league city. The new crew.
This is to us. This is to Columbus. This is what this is all about. Unity, Columbus, history, the future, the new era, the new crew. Let's get weird. Let's get weird. Let's get weird. It's all because you guys like to drink beer.
Live from Awesome Town, Ohio.
You are listening to the Massive Report Podcast.
Your complete source of news and information for your Awesome Town crew.
And it is the Massive Report. Good evening and welcome to it. Post-Chicago drubbing edition. And apparently people are already chuckling about things that I'm unaware of. So we're going to get right into it. We're brought to you by Land Grant Brewing. We're at Hendock's Pub like we are almost every Monday night unless the U.S. has a game, which is why we've been on Tuesdays a lot lately. So thanks so much for joining us once again. Joined by Sam. Hitting the buttons. Alex, Morgan, Justin, Greg.
Alex Morgan's here?
Alex Morgan is totally here.
Nice.
I wish. God, I would trade both of you in a heartbeat for her.
I'd like, trade myself for
you. Yeah, wouldn't fair get enough. Alex Morgan for both of them.
That's totally fine.
So, two matches to discuss, and the crew win for the first time in a long time in Bridgeview on Wednesday night. We're going to talk about that one first. 1-0 victory. And Greg, I'm going to start with you. What stood out to you in that match?
What stood out for me is the dominance that Columbus asserted over the entire match, pretty much from the get-go. This was not a "Whoa, I'm working now." Oh no, I can actually hear myself because somebody turned up my headset. There you go. That's going to sound weird on the playback.
Did I turn yours up by accident?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, because we're both plugged into the same. Because there's only four and whatever. Anyway, now that I can hear myself, which is nice. No, Columbus were completely dominant. It was unlike anything we've seen from them on the road this year. It was one of those games where they took advantage of an opponent that wasn't particularly good, and they had to. This was the road game that if they're going to finally, you know, get off the schneid and win one away from Mafre, then this was the one to do it.
And break their duck.
Break the duck, yes. It is Ashes season after all. Thank you.
I like the word schneid.
Schneid. See, I'm trying to come to you guys, and you guys are trying to come to me. This is good. This is...
That's German, isn't it? Schneid.
I think it's... I don't know. It's German village, at least.
Schneid Le Whiplash. Le Whiplash.
No, they were very good.
Yeah.
They had to be very good, and they were.
Justin, that Wednesday match. Thoughts?
We got off the schneid.
I need to stop watching SportsCenter.
There were lots of schneids that were gotten off.
Did Morgan's voodoo curse work?
I missed that.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Morgan. Well, yeah.
There's
some voodoo. Yeah,
there's pictures.
Yeah. It's on this thing called the internet. We also talked about it at work.
Wait, what?
I don't remember that.
He's Morgan, like, I never listened
Morgan,
to that.
I need to get off the schneid.
Did your voodoo curse work?
Yeah, I think it did, Matt. Yeah. First of all, really happy to be here. Good to see you again. Can't wait to talk to some real fans of the Destroyers about football in Ohio. So this is going
to
be great.
I hate you, Morgan. Yeah. I really hate you. I hate you so much. I wish I could hate you to death right now.
Yeah, why don't you go walk into traffic, friend?
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Give me your thoughts on the game on Wednesday.
Two things jump out to me. We're doing our hot takes. First two things, hashtags. The complete dominance in the first half, that was just dirty. I looked up to a friend of the show, a longtime listener, Kip Lexner, in the 38th minute, and I says, Chicago hasn't had the ball yet. Like, they've cleared it a couple times, but they have not possessed the ball yet in the 38th minute. It was awesome. It was great to see. It was everything we've hoped and dreamed for in all of our lives. And Sean Johnson, would you just take your ass to Europe already? Get the hell out of here.
Johnson was fantastic. That was the only reason that was a 1-0 game and not 4-5-12.
Yep.
I mean, it was, the defense didn't have much help for him.
Alex, give me your initial thoughts.
I was really happy with the performance. I thought everybody played well. It's amazing how much better we look with Will Trapp in the center midfield. And I was extra happy because I correctly predicted the score for once. So that was nice to get one.
Nobody,
finally.
No, don't you clap for him.
No, let him clap for me, Morgan, please.
Oh God!
Thanks, guys.
Is this indicative? And obviously, we're going to get into the home match, which is fresh on everybody's minds as it was last night. But the Crew pick up their first road win of the season in Chicago. I'm sorry, Bridgeview, which is by far the worst team in the league. So I want everybody's thoughts on this. Is this that the Crew have figured out how to win away, or is it that Chicago just can't figure out how to win at all?
Well, listen, you can't – seriously, the Columbus Cruisers FC had not won in Bridgeview since 2006.
No.
That was 9 years of away futility. There's some ties mixed in there, and, you know, MLS is insane, but I don't think you can discredit this at all. At some point, you're going to have to figure out how to win. And doing it in a place that you haven't won in 9 years, you know, more power to them.
But that feeds right back into my question. Is this because we've figured out how to win in Bridgeview, or we've just...
Maybe your
Chicago
question is
hasn't,
the problem.
Chicago hasn't figured out how to win in Bridgeview.
Well, yeah, no, they haven't.
I mean, Justin, which one is it?
I don't think we're that much better than we were 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I think it's the same team that got destroyed by Montreal. Yeah. I think
who's 3 points ahead of Chicago in the standings.
And one of those two teams is probably going to get Didier Drogba.
Yeah.
So there's that. I thought the team played very well against Chicago on Wednesday. I thought last night they played about as good. I suppose we're getting a little better. But it's not great. I mean, like, there were times last night where I just couldn't believe that we have Major League Soccer-level defenders.
Mm-hmm.
Manuel Pogatetz is apparently what? Where is he?
Yeah, what's up with that?
I think he must be gone. Or, like, in the doghouse, the mad doghouse. Maybe he's on some Schneid somewhere. I don't know. But
God,
he's...
Schneid is everywhere.
He's no longer around. And that's sort of strange.
Was he not on the bench?
He was.
He was.
He just
yeah.
wasn't. He wasn't. He wasn't in the starting 11.
Has anybody heard anything about that?
No. Maybe he'll tweet about it. Or
tune
something.
In the Mass Report to
Applebee's
have, hear us ask questions about things.
Applebee's waitress told me that
pedestrian bridge
flu-like symptoms.
Hmm.
It's not true.
Flu-like.
It's not true at all.
Schneid-like.
I just made
symptoms.
That a Schneid-like symptoms.
I honestly think it was a matchup thing. For some reason there was a change at the home game in Chicago. Was probably to give him some rest before, after the bad, terrible Montreal game.
You mean the away game in Chicago?
Yeah, the away game in Chicago, sorry.
Hmm.
We don't have many home games in Chicago.
They matched up so well.
Neither does Chicago.
Even, you know, said the change coming into this game, they put in Clutie to help the speed of Akam on the left side. So I think it's just a matchup thing. I think he starts the next game.
I wouldn't read too much into this either. It's that, the matchup thing, and it's also form thing. I mean, you know, as we've talked about, he had a horrible game in Montreal. Sometimes when a guy has a game like that, he's got some confidence issues, or, you know, maybe it's best to rest him if you've got a better guy that can fit the position, or somebody who matches up better against the players. Because,
so,
you know, what?
Well, Tyson Wall matches up better against who exactly? I mean, that would be my question. I don't think. I mean, there was literally a time. There was a moment in the game where he literally fell down, like he was walking and tried to make a move and fell down.
Undue hate.
And you know that led to, you know, the Crew getting or the Chicago getting the free kick, which led to the goal.
Well, those
I mean, I don't.
Running is hard, Justin.
It is.
Let's be real about it.
Being quick when you're running, you can run slowly and it's easy.
Yeah, totally.
Running quickly on a Schneid, particularly.
Oh yeah, Schneid
is very, very.
Am I the only person who knows that expression?
Yes.
Apparently I am.
Yes, you are.
It's a baseball thing. It is. I know.
It's, okay. It you know, those painted lines on the field will jump up every once in a while, Justin, and just trip you. And I'm sad that you're not.
Well, the grass doesn't turn white. There's literally paint on it. Like, yeah. So it is, there is more mass there.
Yeah.
But I think the key to this
Wait,
is...
it doesn't?
I'm curious, though, like what... Last night when I was watching the game, I think you're right. I think Will Trapp makes a big difference. Or a difference.
I think Chad Barson as well. I was really impressed with Chad Barson. I think
Barson had a fantastic game on Wednesday. Yeah,
I mean, if he goes like this another two games, you start to wonder, okay, is this the guy who's going to be like the permanent Hernan Grana replacement? I have been really impressed with him. He understands Berhalter's system a lot better than he did earlier.
You said something very interesting, Berhalter's system.
Yeah.
This is starting to be an issue, I think. I think teams that are better are going to annihilate the way that we play soccer. Like, we play so predictably.
I agree.
And against a team like Chicago, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Against a team like Toronto next week, it's going to matter. As these teams get better, as more as MLS kind of funnels better players into some of these teams that we're fighting for a playoff spot, I think it's going to matter a lot. I would really like to see something happen where Greg Berhalter or the coaching staff or whoever throws a little bit of a difference into the way that this team plays, because we are so absolutely predictable. It's get the ball down the flanks, cross it. Get the ball down the flanks, cross it. We are incapable, it seems, of playing in front of at the top of the 18-yard box.
Yeah.
And that is a bad sign. When you watch teams that are competing in this league for the cup, they are able to play in the middle of the field. We do not play in the midfield. I don't understand why we don't. We have all these midfielders on this team. The team is loaded with midfielders, and we don't play in the midfield.
Well, I know you and I have talked for a while about like this need for kind of a plan B, mm-hmm. like an alternate system to the system we usually play, and I still don't think he's found that. I hope that, you know, if we have this cap room, that we'll take advantage of that, get some players in with some different attributes, so that if he needs to switch it up every week, he can.
Maybe that's what that Kenwyn Jones thing is all about.
But Kenwyn Jones is basically going to go more towards that crossing into the center mm-hmm. thing. Kenwyn Jones, if you've watched him in the Premier League, he is a incredibly physical, very, very tall forward who is very, very good at heading the ball. He's the kind of perfect guy that would be able to get on the end of a cross from Ethan Finley or a Justin Merrim and bury it.
We all know that Cardiff isn't in the Premier League, Alex. Jesus.
He's a Premier League striker, an English striker. I don't know if that's the direction that we want to go. I would like, and I've said this for a while, I would like a kind of a secondary striker type of player, like a Sebastian Jovinko molded kind of player.
Like
somebody who can get in between their lines and create problems with Finley and Merrim cutting inside. But it seems like we're going down that wide route, and I have the same concern Justin does. I think we need a plan B, something very different. Otherwise, teams are going to know how to set up against us, and it's going to cause problems.
Well, let's talk about going from there. Let's talk about Sunday's matchup. The Crew get on the board very early with a penalty. I think somebody said, Morgan? The fastest, or maybe it was Justin earlier.
The fastest PK in MLS history.
We can debate back and forth whether or not it was deserved. But we've also had a lot that have not gone our way for the entire season. The first penalty that the Crew have gotten, so coin flip.
Took 21 games to get the first penalty.
This to me, I watched the replay quite a few times. A bit soft, but at the same time, it's the law of averages. Eventually, you're going to get one called. If you're not getting ones that are deserved called for you, eventually you're going to get one called for you. Chicago gets back on the board very quickly afterwards. Looked like a glancing deflection off the wall from Justin Merrim that ended up putting that one in. And then the Crew score two more. And nobody cares about the goal that got scored on us or the penalty, because we won no matter. We would have won 2-0 even without those. So let's get into that, and let's chat about that for a second. Alex, I haven't started with you lately. I'm going to start with you. Your thoughts on Sunday's match?
Well, I was really happy with the win, and I was happy that they called the penalty because I correctly predicted a 3-1 scoreline.
That's why they did it.
I'm not getting the applause this time. All right, fine. You guys just do whatever Morgan tells
don't
you.
Don't applaud him.
God.
There it is. Thank you, guys. Thank
you're,
you.
You are so insufferable when you're right.
Thank you. No, but seriously, I thought, you know, another good game. And again, I think that Will Trapp, assuming he's healthy again, I know he featured against Montreal, but it was clear when you were watching him play in Montreal that he was rusty. He was not on the same page with the other midfielders. He was not on the same page with the wingers. He was not functioning as an effective midfielder. That rust is basically gone now. He had a much better game. He misplaced a couple of passes. There was one in particular that I remember where he actually like put his hand up and apologized because it was such a bad ball. But for the most part, he is getting back into the system, getting back into the swing of things, and about time. I mean, oh my gosh, we played so much better the last two games than we've played since he went down with the injury.
Greg, well, leading on from that, we've talked about how Mohamed Saeed had been kind of playing out of position, playing in Will Trapp's spot.
Yep.
Saeed is not a defensive mid, you know, the guy who drops back to be pretty much the center half or the sweeper at some point in Berhalter's system. To have Trapp back there has been night and day difference. I only got to catch the highlights of this one. Sadly, I wasn't there. But this, again, was one of those games that could have gone either way after the second goal, or after the Chicago goal, because this was another case of Crew give up one early, you know, in their own building. It's, what, three straight home games now?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least, was there one in between? They gave up one against the Red Bulls and one against New England.
Yeah.
And now this one. Regardless of the fact of whether or not they scored one, as soon as, you know, I'm looking at my phone watching this thing and all of a sudden the alert comes in, Chicago's pulled one back, I'm like, hey, Crew gave up one at home in the first 10 minutes again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what needs to be done to address that. That's a problem for me because, again, we've touched on this. Better teams are going to take advantage of that and use that to turn a game.
The thing about the goal for me, though, was that it was a deflection on a free kick. I mean, it bounced off Merrim's head and
bounced.
Well, yeah, it took a deflection off.
It didn't seem like Merrim wanted to be in the way of that.
The fact that there's a free kick in that position to begin with, though.
There was a ball schneiding towards his head. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You're going to schneid. That's what you're going to do.
All I'm saying is,
take it on the neck.
He didn't have a chance to schneid.
No.
It was so hard and so fast.
Clark had no chance to save it, is my only point.
You can hear the schneid clearly in the corner.
Really taking this one and running with it, ain't ya?
Oh, yeah.
Well, at least we're not talking about Philadelphia.
For the love.
I got that in there before Sam could turn my mic off.
Cheese steaks are amazing.
Yes,
that's
they
what
are.
We're talking about Philadelphia. So, anyway, Justin, your thoughts on Sunday's match? Please bail us out of this.
Magic poopies.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a very entertaining game to watch on ESPN, which we don't usually get to do very often. Ever. And
unless ESPN screws up the feed.
I thought, in general, I thought it was very entertaining and it was a really well-played game by the Crew. And part of that was, you know, we did have a 11v10 advantage for a portion of the game.
What a dive, though.
What an incredible dive.
That was
one of the dumbest things.
Yeah.
You guys remember the Toyota commercials in the 80s where they jump up and hang in midair with like the knees up and everything? That's exactly what that was. That's that moment right there.
I got to tell you guys one thing real quick before we go into what we're going to talk about next. But John Zadar, friend of the show and our research assistant today, because he remembered to bring his laptop, went through and looked. 2010 was the last time the Crew didn't lose at least one game to Chicago in either league or Open Cup play. Three draws that year. 2008, the Crew beat Chicago in the playoffs, as you all know, but drew every league match, but lost in extra time in the Open Cup. This is the first time since 2010. However, now, John, you just have a new thing. When's the last time we actually got, you know, we actually won against Chicago and also didn't lose?
Undefeated plus a win.
Undefeated plus a win. Get to it. That's how you pay for your bar tab, Nancy.
one thing, though, I mean, you mentioned the penalty. Look, I don't know. It really looked sketchy to me. Yeah. I don't think there's a way that you give that. I don't think you should get that as a penalty call. But look,
it was no Uribe
but
Peralta.
But it happened.
No,
but it was.
That's true.
That's a teaser.
I hope
by
we
the
talk
way.
About that. Yeah.
That's a teaser.
The but if that had happened to say Orlando, just to throw out a team.
Oh my god!
just a random team in MLS.
I honestly think that like the entire state of Florida probably would have imploded.
I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I'm okay with this. Mm-hmm.
But it was really bad. But the one thing I liked about that, though, was it was Kamara to Finley again.
Yeah.
And again, those two guys are playing so well together.
That's the thing that we try to do every kickoff.
Every single time.
That literal play. Another thing about the PK, that was not only the fastest in MLS history, that was obviously our first of the year, which makes it 21 games before we got a penalty kick. That's the third longest in crew history, behind 25 in 2001 and 31 games until our first PK in 99.
Wow. Interesting.
Quickest. Also, Higuain scored it at the south end, which is a bit of an anomaly in itself because he skied down there before.
As did Brian Carroll.
Brian Carroll skied it towards north end. That was over the stage. He skied it over the stage. That thing hasn't hit. That thing landed in the Lowe's building and is still there.
Maybe that's why I thought so, because it went around the earth and came back.
True
over
story.
The south
yeah,
stage.
Yeah. Over the stadium. Oh, yeah.
Another good point from though that was during the game. Alexi Lalas pointed out that, you know, the opening kick of the game is a set piece.
Yeah.
He's got a really good point. I mean, that's a set piece.
Set piece orgy.
And so, you know, that's a good bit of preparation by the coaching staff, I think, to go for that.
Yeah. Just go in and see what happens.
But one other thing I was talking about, you know, we were talking about the changing things up a little bit. I would really like to see us try out that 3-5-2 that they tried in the Open Cup match.
In Richmond. Yeah.
I think when you bring Mbati in, you need to have him, if he's good enough, if he truly is the savior that we all have been told that he is.
Alex!
He's not a wingback, though.
No, he would play. He could play.
He would play
the
other forward.
I
would put him up front. You don't want him to have any sort of defensive responsibility, and he would have defensive responsibility if he was playing.
Not necessarily.
I mean, he can't be worse than Merrim defensively. So
yeah.
Anything
I mean,
we
I,
get
I think,
would be an improvement.
And the other thing,
am
they,
I right,
that
Todd?
It would do
You're
is
right.
it would get it would get Higuain forward. We really need to have Higuain.
But he's the number one option
forward.
From Steve Clark. Steve Clark goes to Freddie Ballkicker.
It's really
like
weird.
It's so weird.
It's really weird to see Higuain tracking. And this is one of the things I
pass me the ball, Steven Clark.
At Will Trapp, and I think like you need to start giving him some more responsibility.
Yeah,
because he should be able to play that role that Higuain does from time to time when he comes back.
You passed him
to collect
Stephen
the ball.
Clark, I got to ask them.
Yeah, let him get up. Let him play with Merrim and Finley and Mbati and Kamara. And I think you've got a completely different dynamic that would throw a monkey wrench into what other teams expect. And it would, you know, maybe get some other teams on the schneid, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Couple funny things to point out here real quick.
Here we go. Here's a joke. It's a joke section.
Not a joke. No, it's just interesting funny. Not funny.
Wacky,
but Jason Johnson from the Bridgeview Fire goes out at the 50th minute for diving. Red card there. It didn't really have that much of a bearing on the rest of the match, that we're already up 2-1. What do you guys think? Did that really have much to do with the end of that match? Or was Chicago just kind of doomed to fail?
Yes, the last part, for sure.
I thought it was funny. I enjoyed all the Chicago fans and players and coaching staff after the match saying that it ruined the game as if it wasn't totally a yellow card. It was like if you've ever played like FIFA 2008, like online, and you were like the other person was, you were playing in like China or something, and then they would do a foul, and then it would take your player like 2 seconds for them to react to it. That's basically what this guy did. He like bumped into a wall, and then he like stood there for a second, then jumped up in the air and did like some sort of cheerleader like thing. And it was, yeah, it was embarrassing. Absolutely a second yellow. And
was the giveaway to the referee that he yelled "Go fight win" in the middle of it?
Yeah, I'm guessing that probably was. It was either that or him pulling the pom-poms out of his socks. It was one of the two things.
Nice.
Or he really loves his new Camry.
Well, yes.
Justin. And are you on the Schneid right now?
I'm kind of on the Schneid. The thing about...
This podcast better be called Schneid, by the way.
The response that was the hot time in old... Was it Hot Time
hot
in
time
Firetown?
In old town. Oh, are we going to talk about
Old Town?
Hot Time in Old Town, where they said that... I can't even remember. Penso, the referee?
Penso, plays for the crew.
Yeah, he actually plays for the crew.
He's our new DP. We did have two spare DP
that's
slots.
Why we didn't get a... That's why we can't get involved in those blind allocation draws, because we keep... Because
but it's great, because there's like an actual like explanation as to why it's like that, and it's because he's from Dover, Ohio. And I'm going to look this up, like, who tweeted me, and they said because Dover is, of course, like a notorious, like... Like
Columbus crew mecca.
Yeah, hotbed of crew mecca.
Somewhere in
Honestly,
Texas right
like
now.
There are three bars in Dover, Ohio, and all of them are called Hooligan's Pub.
The thing is, it's so ridiculous from the Chicago fans. I mean, they should know better. We signed him as a core player, not as a DP.
Yeah, like, Penzo was, he was definitely signed as a
you guys,
player.
You paid him down with allocation money. Come on, guys.
Do your research. If you have a look at that that article again, I'm pretty sure Eric Gehrig posted it.
It was Andrew Stanky who wrote Dover is a known stronghold to all things Columbus.
Does anyone know where Dover is? I have no idea where the hell Dover, Ohio is. Jenny Bell,
if only we all had some devices in front of us that connected to the internet.
Shut the hell up, Greg. Go stand in the corner.
Dover is the Helm's Deep of Columbus.
That's five out of the seven people here are on their pronunciation.
Yeah, no, anyway. This is making for great radio. The other thing that I wanted to point out, the match report said that it was cloudy.
Well, that was actually true by the time the game started.
Partially accurate.
Dover is...
Dover's next to New Philadelphia.
It's right down 250 from Beach City, Ohio. It's a little bit south of Canton.
Sam, please stop this. Play the music that makes us go to break.
Wait, could you say
this
Canton?
Is what he's
Canton,
doing.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's...
Louder, Sam.
He's playing the music that makes us go to break, because I asked him to. We're going to come back in a little bit. USA beats up on Cuba in everything but diplomatic relations. Talk Gold Cup in just a second here. Plus, way more of this shenanigans. Oh, and the All-Star team. And whatever else we decide to talk about. It's coming up next. Massive Report. When a man named Al Capone tried to make that town his own. The forces of the law. I heard my mama cry. I heard her pray the night Chicago died. Brother, what a night it really was. Brother, what a fight it really was. Glory be. I heard my mama cry. I heard her pray the night Chicago. Yes, indeed. And the sound of the battle rang through the streets of the old east side.
This edition of the Massive Report podcast is brought to you, as always, by Land Grant Brewing Company. Howdy, kiddos. Your good pal Morgan Hughes here to talk to you about a serious issue facing 100% of soccer franchises in the city of Toronto. Perpetual operational futility, of course. In a league where the primary business plan year in and year out is to spend as much money as it takes to make your team better than every other team, you continue to find ways to not qualify for a playoff system that hilariously includes 60% of the teams in your conference.
That's a commitment to failure the likes of which have never been seen in North American sports. And it's entirely likely that Season 9 will end the same way that Seasons 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 ended. Aw, come on now, hosers. You can turn that frown upside down, because I got some great news for you. Land Grant Brewing Company has a cure for what ails ya. That's right. Their medium-sized glass containers, which are filled to the brim with delicious intoxicating alcohol, are not only great for drinking, but are also perfect for when you need to pour liquids on the burning dumpster fire of failure that is your perpetually embarrassing franchise. Hooray! So grab your non-existent back line, all three of your current designated players, who each make more than the entire Columbus Crew SE roster combined, and head on down to Land Grant Brewing Company to drink away every single one of those pesky and painful Trillium Cup memories. And don't you dare forget to tell them your friends over at the Mod Massive Report Podcast sent you. Easy for me to say.
Reports Gold Cup. The United States men's national soccer ball kickers, as Morgan Hughes would say, defeat the Cuban national team in the quarterfinals by a score of 6-0. That was earlier this week, Saturday to be exact. It was kind of nice we didn't have a match so we could just kind of watch the Gold Cup and not have to deal with anything else.
That was not nice. I did not enjoy that.
Yeah. Well,
it was very good of
why do you
US
hate America?
Soccer to not have to divide our attention.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, Justin, your thoughts on the Cuba match? Did that mean anything other than we advanced?
Yeah, sure. I thought it was perfect timing for that match. The they needed to have somebody that they could basically go out and have a scrimmage against is what it was like, and so they did a lot of things that got them. They got them right. Now the question is, do they feel overconfident from it? I don't think Klinsmann's going to allow them to feel overconfident. They're going to play against a team that's going to do the exact opposite of what Cuba did. Cuba did not park the bus at all. They didn't bunker. They tried to play, which I was very. That's impressive that a team that's that overmatched would come out and try to play. Jamaica is not going to do that. What they're really good at is bunkering and then counterattacking with their speed, and that worries me a little bit. I think basically if the U.S. has a problem with turning the ball over, and if they do that against when Jamaica's set up in the right way, it could cost us, because I don't think Brad Buzan he's not Timmy Howard.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Tim Howard can make a miracle happen when he's got three guys running at him with possession. I don't know if Brad Guzan can do that. But I think it was good. Getting back to the Cuba match, I thought you get Clint Dempsey out, and Clint Dempsey doing his Clint Dempsey stuff, scoring goals, and that there's nothing bad that can come from that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not on the Schneid.
He's not in the shine? All right, Morgan.
I'm so bored by United States soccer.
Just like destroying Japan in the Women's World Cup, destroying Cuba. Like, it's just, this is so boring. Like, you couldn't even you couldn't cheer for any of those goals. You're like, yep, definitely should have scored. That's great. Boring, stupid game, Matt. And I invite you again to walk into traffic. Back to you,
Alex.
I didn't watch it. Pass.
Greg
didn't watch it. Was working, but yeah, no. Apparently, there was a game on the other half of the bracket.
Yeah, there was.
I watched that one.
Oh yeah. Well, thanks, Dix.
I was busy.
That was a teaser.
Jamaica beats Haiti by a score of 1-0. Big fire truck goes by. Trinidad and Tobago and Panama play to penalties. Panama wins in penalties. And Mexico steals one against Costa Rica.
To say the least.
Actually stole it. Literally stole it
at the death. 180th plus minute. Was that actually a penalty? Or did you, CONCACAF, just want to make some more money? Oh, I love it that Tony is signaling to me it was a dive. Tony, that's what I was teasing, and I was trying to get the other people to have a conversation about it. But thanks for ruining that, Tony. Go stand in the corner.
The referees, Ethan Finley, did a little bit. I mean, that was never a penalty, but, you know, what can you do? It's CONCACAF. Does anybody seriously think that the CONCACAF Gold Cup is, like, a legitimate tournament that's not rigged for entertainment purposes? Because I've always kind of thought it was shady at best. I wasn't that surprised.
It's with the quality of, I mean, up until the last couple of years, with the quality of competition that the U.S. and Mexico have had, you know, it's been one of those things where it's been a foregone conclusion for years and years that was what was going to happen. Now you have teams like Jamaica, Costa Rica, teams like that are actually Panama is another great example. I mean, the teams that are still in it plus Costa Rica are very good teams. You're not going to see, you know, you're not going to see it in nothing against them. I mean, it's good that they made it to where they were, but Cuba's not going to be in the finals anytime soon. They right. just don't have that quality of a squad. Same reason why you're not going to see, you know, Haiti in the finals or some of these other teams. But there's a difference between rigged and just outmatched. This year, I think Mexico might have been, you know, goosed. You know, that game had everything written on it, like, this is weird. But at the same time, I don't know if that's necessarily match-fixing in the past or if it's just, you know, those were the two best teams. Justin, your thoughts?
I think the Gold Cup it fits whatever narrative you want it to fit. I think it's important if you want Jurgen Klinsmann to be fired. I think if they lose against Jamaica, no matter how it's done, or if they lose against Mexico, it's going to be deafening. If they win, then they move forward. They get to go to the Confederations Cup, which is, you know, that's worthwhile because what that means is that in 2017, they're going to get to play in Russia. As a warm-up for the World Cup, which is, that's got value.
Yeah.
Because you can't get that kind of experience very easily. But it's not a, I agree with kind of what you're saying and what Alex is saying is that it's not fair.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't seem like it's on the up and up. And part of that is, like what we saw yesterday, I don't think the match was fixed. I just think that in a big stadium that's filled with Mexican fans of the Mexican national team, whether they're from Mexico or whether they've traveled from Mexico or whether they're you know, immigrants
fans
here
Mexico,
in the United
yeah.
States,
they're,
you
yeah.
know, that was an overwhelmingly pro-Mexican crowd. And the Costa Ricans played so well, but they should have been down by like 5 goals. I mean, the thing about Mexico is that they can't finish. They're just not very good.
It was amazing. It was so fun.
Yeah, in that final third, they're just not very good.
If you watch referee's face after he calls out PK, because, you know, Costa Ricans are all over him, and rightfully so, he's just like, dude, there's nothing I can do. I literally was given a chance to send this team through, and I had to. It's my... It,
I've been told. So,
I don't want to get pelted with urine.
Yeah.
To me, it looked like a guy who made a decision based on what he heard in his ear, which was however many tens of thousands of pro-Mexican fans baying for a penalty. And immediately he thinks, I don't know if maybe I should have done that. Like, I immediately regret this decision. Ron Burgundy moment. To me, I don't think this is a case of a fix. I think this is a poor decision. You know, that just happens to be in the time frame that, you know, I think the whole concept of match fixing and, you know, the fix is in and everything that gets tweeted.
Greg, are you saying
like
that the
happens.
Referees make bad calls sometimes?
I'm saying the referees make bad calls a lot of the time. And I said this on Twitter last night as somebody who watches MLS, as somebody who watches A-League, as somebody who has watched international games that are not in UEFA or South America, you know, there's a significant drop-off after a certain level of refereeing, after which... Yeah,
where does Dover fall in there?
Well, the biggest thing,
I still don't know where Dover falls
Dover,
anywhere.
Which Dover?
Which Dover? That's in the south of England, I think.
I mean, the biggest thing is that, you know, looking at this continent, the biggest, you know,
countries,
the biggest countries go forward, but at the same time, the biggest and most populous countries, because you have Canada as well, but nobody lives there. But you look at...
And the ones who do certainly don't know how to play soccer.
They suck, yeah.
Three games, no goals.
They're really good at hockey.
You compare it, though, to...
The hell was that?
You compare it to South America, you compare it to Europe, mm-hmm. and you can't.
Right.
Because it's the exact same logic with you know, North America. It's you have... if you look at Africa... For example, you have Egypt, you have Ivory Coast, mm-hmm. you have countries like that, and then you have dozens and dozens of other countries in Africa that are just nowhere near that level. You have Asia is the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. You have some of the teams qualifying in Asia. I have no idea why Australia is in Asia because it doesn't make any sense. They're not on that continent. But
we'll
anyway,
go, we'll go into
Australia,
that sometime.
Japan.
I know exactly why. I know why.
I'm just giving you a hard time, Greg.
Of course,
it's fun.
I know.
But you also have, you know, Azerbaijan and Qatar and countries like that that are just. That are the Trinidad and Tobago. Well, not even Trinidad and Tobago because they could actually make it this far in a tournament. But I'm trying to think of a good Turks and Caicos. Yeah. You know, things like that. You have all these small countries, but people don't pay attention in North America until it gets to the Gold Cup stage.
I think that's
until
one of the reasons.
It's the actual stage where it's the finals of that tournament.
I think that's one of the reasons why the U.S.-Mexico rivalry is such a big deal. And it's not just cultural. It's not just the fact that there are so many, you know, Mexican Americans or, you know, the we share a border or whatever. It's the fact that for the longest time, the U.S. and Mexico have been where it's at as far as CONCACAF is concerned. And it's one of the reasons why the rivalry means so much is because both of those teams have been very good, and two good teams make a really good, long-lasting rivalry.
Yeah.
You know, you look at it in any sport or any, you know... But you're right. After that, there's... You know, you've got Costa Rica now that's kind of, you know, that stepped up their game in Jamaica and Panama.
Yeah.
But it's not like you look at Europe where you've got, you know, Germany could have competitive games against the Netherlands or Spain or France or England or Italy or whoever. Like, name a dozen countries.
Yeah, everybody except for, like, Gibraltar and a few of the, you know, I mean, a few of the tiny, like, city-states in Europe. Other
Liechtenstein.
Than that, you could have a relatively competitive game mm-hmm. in Europe if you just throw a dart and hit two countries.
Right.
In North America, it's not like that.
Yeah, U.S. versus Belize is only going to end one way.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that and I like the fact competitive on a competitive scale. I like the fact that you have these countries stepping up their game. I mean, Jamaica has been good for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Other countries, I mean, well, the ones we've talked about so far, they're starting to get better or they've been good. But I'd like to see more of these countries just kind of step their games up.
I'd like to see Canada step their game up.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be a fantastic addition to
It would be a much more interesting Gold Cup.
Shame on these impoverished island states.
Yes, that's exactly where I was going with
Morgan. I mean, we are not entertained. Matt, you're a monster.
No, the systems aren't as... Which is why Canada really doesn't have much of an excuse.
But Justin, bail me out of this one.
One of the really, I thought, insightful tweets, which is kind of almost an oxymoron, but an insightful tweet that I saw yesterday, and I wish I could remember who did it. I'll
1491 Ultras?
Definitely with it was Z. Not maybe yeah, them. They're on the Schneid.
For sure.
They're terrible.
They're on the Twitter Schneid.
Yeah, totally on the Schneid.
But one of the insightful tweets I saw was... that yes, Mexico stole the game in a tournament that is always played in the United States.
Mm-hmm. I was Maxi. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it
football analyst?
Was it?
Yeah.
It was. Well, that's a really good point. I mean, the Gold Cup is always played in the United States. Why? Because more people are able to go. There's money.
Yeah,
and it's the only place you're going to sell tickets.
Yeah. So I mean, it's questionable. Mm-hmm. It's questionable from the get-go.
Maybe Mexico.
Well, you could sell tickets, at least in my opinion, you could sell tickets to Gold Cup in Canada. You could sell tickets to Gold Cup in Mexico. They played in Toronto this year. But what I'm saying is, I mean, you could sell tickets in Jamaica and a lot of other places for the Gold Cup as well. I don't know, corporate sponsor-wise, I don't know television-wise, things along those lines, what you'd be able to do with that. And I don't know about stadium infrastructure as far as I'm using Jamaica just as the first country that came to mind.
Yeah.
There's a reason they only play all their national team games at one stadium. There's not a Georgia Dome There's not a Georgia Dome in Jamaica. And that's the biggest thing is that you have these giant stadiums. You don't need to prepare other than maybe putting down grass, but I don't even think they've done that.
But let's be honest though. The U.S. played an actual competitive match in Baltimore, and it was maybe half full.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's true.
You know, take that for what it's worth. The seats aren't selling for the United States in Baltimore, Maryland. I mean, the Meadowlands was filled with Mexican fans.
Yeah.
Filled.
Why do they keep giving doses of to Columbus? Man.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, and AO Baltimore had their own questionable...
Oh, dear God, yeah.
...attempt to get people out. I think people knew that it still hasn't resonated. I mean...
Let's talk about that just for a second, that mildly racist thing that...
Oh, I don't know if it's
you
racist.
Don't want to?
It was just stupid. It was just dumb.
It's stupid.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought it was just like, you know, two free natty daddies with the purses of every tank top or something.
No, I wouldn't say that it was racist. Okay. I think AO dumbness.
Personally, because you alerted me to it and I looked it up. I thought it was mildly racist. I didn't think it was full out, you know. All right, fair enough.
Maybe, I don't know. Who am I to judge?
Yeah, I don't know.
You're Justin Bell, Massive Report panel member.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's your job.
I just think it was...
what you're supposed to do.
I think it was typical. I mean, look...
What's typical of AO?
It's... What is... And that gets back to what this whole point of this discussion is, I suppose, is, like, what is the role of Gold Cup in American soccer? And what is the role of the fan, the supporter of the United States men's national team in Gold Cup? It clearly does not capture the imagination of the average sports fan.
It doesn't. It's not UEFA Cup.
No.
It's the Open Cup of men's national team soccer.
It is a bit.
Yeah.
I mean,
go out to the bar.
Yeah, if it did, then there wouldn't be a reason for the kind of thing that was done to get people to show up for the United States men's national team. Because it would be jam-packed. I went on there to look and see if I could get tickets.
Yeah.
Like... There were so many tickets available.
Of course there were, because they're playing these in giant football stadiums, and it's the Gold Cup. Know your audience.
Soccer in America is never going to work.
Never, ever, ever, never.
Well, you look at the crowds at
Joe
Kansas City, for example. They packed out Sporting Park and they made a huge deal about it. Right, that's what I'm saying. They made a huge deal about, oh, look, we filled the stadium to the rafters and everything. It's like, okay, it's a 19,000 capacity stadium. They did win the stands.
Yeah.
But you look at, by comparison, you look at how Australia responded to hosting the AFC championship earlier this year.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Not an empty seat virtually anywhere. You know, I don't know. This is supposed to be a tournament that's on par with that. It's a regional, national tournament.
I'll tell you a couple things. Mexico hosted Trinidad and Tobago in Charlotte at M&T Bank Stadium. 55,823 there.
M&T
no,
Bank
excuse
Stadium.
Me, Bank of America Stadium. I misspoke. Okay. 55,000 there. Mexico hosted played Guatemala in Glendale, Arizona. Surprise, surprise, sold out. 62,910. Mexico plays Cuba at Soldier Field. Another sellout. 54,126 fans show up to that. Sporting Park. U.S. plays Panama. 18,000. Foxborough, U.S. plays Haiti, 46,000. U.S. plays Honduras at Toyota Stadium, another soccer-specific stadium. Another sellout, though, 22,000.
That's Toyota Stadium, not to be confused with Toyota Park.
Yeah, which is super confusing in what it is. Yeah. I mean, is Mexico can play almost anywhere in the United States and sell the match out no matter who they're playing.
Yeah.
Not in Columbus.
Well, the match would still sell.
Well,
correct.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking at it, the third place match is going to be played in Chester.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. So many
deaths. Just let that sit there.
Yeah, the first place match is at the Eagles Stadium, the Link.
Yeah.
The third place match is in Chester. So that's the punishment for not winning.
To be fair, the reward for winning is that you have to go to Philly.
Yeah, well.
It's not really that much of an upgrade.
Philly smells so bad in the summer. Oh, my God. Don't go there. Fall or the spring.
It's
please.
So true.
I'm saving you, please. Just believe me. Listen to me. Don't go there in the summer. It's
nothing
so
magical
bad.
About those poopies, Alex.
Oh, my God.
Sam.
Terrible.
Don't you do it. You turn it up.
Yeah, I don't get that. That's confusing.
Am I back on? Okay.
Congratulations to Kai Kamara, Ethan Finley, Waylon Francis, Team of the Week.
Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Gold Cup Team of the Week.
The other thing that I wanted to just point out here is that Canada plays Costa Rica at BMO Field. They draw 16,000.
16,000.
In the 30,000-seat stadium.
Really?
Yeah.
One for every goal they didn't score.
Canada.
I'm going to harp on that.
Canada did not sell out a Canadian national team game in the Gold Cup in Toronto.
If you've seen the way Canada plays, that's kind of an excuse.
Yeah, do you know why?
I mean, Alex Stanek had more chance of scoring in Canada than the Canadian national team did.
Oh, my God.
Alex Stanek actually...
That's literally a knee slapper. I'm slapping the shit out of my own knee.
But, no, my question is going back into this. We'll tell you about it during the break.
Alex has
a super hot friend from Montreal.
It's a friend.
Well, that's too bad for you. Anyway, going back into this, though... I want to get a prediction from everybody. We're going into this match on Wednesday against Jamaica. Does the U.S. win? And if so, by how much? Justin. Also guess the attendance. Just for fun.
Where are we playing again?
I was looking that up again because I could not remember.
Technical context.
It's great radio. Georgia Dome. At the Georgia Dome at the 50-yard line, something else.
I think there will be a large turnout. Let's say 40-plus thousand people.
Okay.
And I also think that we are going to win that game. Probably 2-0.
Okay. Greg?
I'm going with 3-0. And I'm going with a crowd that will match that of Atlanta United FC City on opening day, MLS 2017.
So 10,000.
Pretty much.
All right, fair enough. Alex?
I think we're going to win 5-1. I think Abby Wambach is going to come in like the 80th minute, and Carly Boyd's going to get a hat trick. I don't care. I'm still in Women's World Cup mode. I don't care about the Gold Cup.
Morgan.
John Candy's still the coach of Jamaica.
Yes.
Then they got a chance. United States Nationals 5 and
Jamaica qualified for bobsled, and Alex still has not kissed a girl from Canada.
Yeah.
She's my friend.
Yeah. What's the attendance?
Kissed
Morgan?
A lot of friends, Alex, just put it out there.
About three.
Three people?
Maybe.
All right, fair enough. I'm going to say U.S. beats Jamaica 3-2. Ooh. I think it's going to be a squeaker.
Oh.
I think the attendance is going to actually be very good because Mexico also plays at the Georgia Dome in the same set.
Oh, you're holding that info back here.
Yep, so it's going to be sold out. But it's not going to be sold out with U.S. fans.
You're fired.
Because you're playing the Gold Cup outside of Columbus. That's all I'm saying. Shame on you, everybody with U.S. soccer. Shame on you. We're going to come back in a minute. Greg's going to rant in Australian. We didn't talk about a lot of things we were supposed to talk about during this segment, but I don't care. And Sam, you're not my real dad. We're coming back in a minute. Massive Report brought to you by Land Grant.
Episodes in, and the cards are raining down like trash at a Gold Cup game. Will it ever stop? Yo, I don't know. Cards Against Insanity coming at you this week, sponsored by the Crew Gear Store, where thanks to a great marketing idea by our friends in San Jose, you can get two tickets to this Saturday's game and get a free Toronto FC jersey. I'm kidding, that's not actually a real thing. Opinions are mine and don't necessarily reflect those of the Massive Report or Columbus Crew SC. Too many nominations this week on the MR Cards hashtag to include them all. One honorary mention goes to the British comedian Simon Brodkin, who threw handfuls of fake money at Sepp Blatter during a press conference earlier today. Fake money, huh? In other news, Simon Brodkin's just been granted an MLS franchise. No card for him, though. These guys, on the other hand. Yellow card to Fabian Delph, and you bet your ass I'm taking this personally. Last week, the England international and then Aston Villa captain issued a statement saying that he changed his mind and turned down an anticipated move to Manchester City, telling fans, quote, "I am not leaving, I'm staying at the football club, and I can't wait for the start of the Premier League season," end quote. 4 days later, Delph did a 180 on his 180 and joined Man City anyway, saying, quote, "Leaving Aston Villa Football Club is the hardest decision I have ever had to make," end quote. As one person on Twitter so well put it, it can't have been that difficult if you made it twice. But this is kind of a follow-on from last week's red card rant about a player's loyalty to a particular club being something only made up in the minds of fans. It's not real. Players move around for all kinds of reasons all the time, and it's not unthinkable that a skilled player would leave a club at the lower end of the table and move to one at the top. But come on. To so passionately pledge your loyalty, to say that you're staying and then leave 4 days later when the third party comes back with a better offer? What are you, my ex-girlfriend? Yellow card to Paddy Power, the Irish bookmaking company, who also need to learn to dispose of unwanted material a little better. A photo has been doing the rounds this past week of a Paddy Power mobile billboard featuring Australian entertainer Rolf Harris and the caption, "The only Aussie we don't want to get out." Blank looks from everyone. Getting out as in a reference to the Australian cricket team because they're playing England in the Ashes right now, but mostly a jab at Harris, who is currently serving prison time in the UK for indecent assault on minors. We don't want to get him out, see? The worst part is that Paddy Power claimed that the billboard was to be destroyed because they acknowledged it was in poor taste, but that someone parked the truck out behind a building somewhere, and then someone took a photo of it, and then that someone posted the photo to Twitter, and yeah, are you smelling PR stunt from within? Me too. Come on, guys. Here in America, we know how to deal with controversy surrounding celebrity child molesters. We just wait until the statute of limitations is passed, and then quietly cancel their TV shows while everyone else is talking about other things. Yellow card to Instagram, who, according to a blog post, have helped Barcelona star Andres Iniesta steal an account belonging to Andres Iniesta. Instagram is alleged to have closed the account at a Iniesta belonging to a regular guy from Madrid named Andres Iniesta, saying that he infringed the terms of use.
A couple days later, he realized that the other slightly more famous Andres Iniesta had taken over his account. No explanation and no response from Instagram when he asked what the heck was going on. After the blog post gained some momentum, the less famous Iniesta wrote an update saying that his account had been restored to him without any apology or explanation from Instagram, although they later issued a statement apologizing for the mistake. So, the more famous Iniesta took the account, possessed it for a while, and then passed it back. Duh, he's a midfielder. Yellow card.
There you go.
Yellow card to a shark. I don't think I've ever given a yellow card to an animal before, but there you go. During a televised World Surf League event off the coast of South Africa, Australian surfer Mick Fanning was flipped off his board by a shark on live TV. And the reason we're not talking about the dearly departed Australian surfer Mick Fanning is because he lived up to every stereotype about Australians ever written by punching the shark. And then presumably he yelled, ha-ha, scoreboard, because the Wallabies just beat the Springboks in Saturday night's rugby match, and maybe that's why a South African shark went looking for an Aussie in the first place. For the second time in 3 weeks, yellow card to Mario Götze, World Cup hero, Bayern Munich superstar, yada yada. He's currently in Beijing with his club, and in a desperate attempt to pander to the Chinese, no pun intended, he told local news agency Xinhao, quote, "I think Chinese food is great, especially sushi," end quote. The sad part is that many Americans listening to this podcast have no idea what's wrong with that statement. Sushi is from Japan, who will be the first to remind you they are not Chinese. But it's okay, Mario, even though your peers recently voted you the second worst player in the Bundesliga, with casual cultural insensitivity like that, you could write the next Seth MacFarlane movie. And finally, red card to the haters, whose true colors came out following last week's ESPY Awards, and you know exactly which award I'm specifically talking about. In case you missed it because you were watching the Crew postgame show or you've been living under a monolith, during Wednesday night's ceremony, Caitlyn Jenner was given the Arthur Ashe Award for Courage after she came out as transgender earlier in the year. And if you ever wanted a night to not be on social media so as to avoid some of the worst that society has to offer spouting their two cents, this was it. But the comments from every mouth breather with an opinion aren't what this is about. My issue is not with them. Trolls on Twitter and Facebook are a dime a dozen. I take far more exception to the news reports that surfaced the following day from various sources. Caitlyn Jenner's reps forced ESPN to give her the award in exchange for an interview. ESPN stripped someone else of the award and gave it to Caitlyn Jenner, whether it was Lauryn Hill or a former serviceman or whoever. And in many ways, the shade being thrown in the form of dodgy reporting is even worse than all the snide remarks from ignoramuses on the internet. Because there's only one reason why these articles ran, and ran when they did, to justify prejudices. To make you feel better about your ignorance, because if Caitlyn Jenner wasn't very nice to someone one time, or there's some reason to judge her other than the fact that she was a woman who was born a man, you don't have to feel like you're being such a bad person for making the comments you do. And to get people in that mentality to visit their sites. Look, it's a natural human reaction to respond to something we don't understand with fear and sometimes revulsion. I don't think that most people who make comments about Caitlyn Jenner necessarily hate her, or transgender people in general, but they don't understand either. And that by itself is fine. But understand this, 40% of transgender teenagers in America will attempt suicide. They need a spokesperson, they need a public figure telling the world they're in their corner, and in Caitlyn Jenner's speech on Wednesday night, they found that moment. Courage comes in a lot of different forms, and for ESPN to give an award to a transgender former athlete, an award for which there were no other nominees, by the way, because that's not how the Arthur Ashe Award works, in no way diminishes courage shown by any other sports person or person at all. And for every comment you make, every clickbait article you fall for, every time you exhibit your lack of understanding, that only cements why Caitlyn Jenner coming out is still a big deal in the first place. And why, if you're going to watch an award show in the first place, this one needed to happen when it did. My name is Greg Benson. You can find me on Twitter as GregRegulator614. And if you're at Hendock's Pub, you're in my seat. A reminder once again to use the hashtag MRCards if you've got something I should be including on next week's show. Until then, play on, but remember, I'm watching.
Mr. Sam, from last week, we're going to have to fire up the breaking news. This literally just came across my plate. I'm sorry, Sam. I would have prepared you earlier, but this is definitely breaking news right now. So we're going to stall for Sam for a half a second here. Greg, good job.
Thank you.
Did very well. Yeah, I don't know why people are whispering. There we go. Breaking news, everyone. Marco Papa from the Seattle Sounders was arrested today. For driving under the influence and speeding, Papa will undergo assessment by MLS's Substance Abuse and Behavioral Health Program. Doctors, pursuant to the SABH policy, I will not be eligible to participate in any competition until that assessment is complete and he is cleared for participation by the doctors and Major League Soccer completes its its thing.
Evaluation.
Yes. Thank you.
Or something.
I don't know. It was too far for
experiment,
me to scroll.
Maybe?
Yeah, experiment. Yeah. Probably experiment. That's probably closer. Marco Papa got arrested for driving drunk. Justin. What do you think?
I don't know. I've talked about... This is what happens, I guess. I mean, you know, people do this. They have issues, and alcohol's a factor in our world.
Yeah.
And,
But my biggest question is, how will the Sounders blogs try to spin this?
Well, that's... I don't know. I hope not. I hope they don't.
Yeah.
They will, though.
Probably. Yeah. I hope what happens is that they do kind of, you know, I'll go back a few weeks to when I was talking about, when we were talking about Hope Solo and, like, what happened there, and I hope it's a similar, I hope people have a constructive approach to this.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It needs to be addressed, but I'm not going to talk about it because I...
No, fair enough.
I don't want to.
Fair
wanna
enough. No, I
hijack that.
Something just happened, so that's the only reason I brought it up.
I hope he gets the help.
Yeah. Alex.
Well, I think it's a good thing that Don Garber just got his University of Phoenix doctor's degree so that he can clear Papa next week so that he'll be back. Seriously, though, I think that I don't think that Seattle fans are going to try to explain it away or anything. I mean, we had a similar issue ourselves not too long ago with one of our players who got into legal trouble and they were kind of essentially kicked off the team. Yeah. And it wouldn't surprise me if a similar thing happened to Papa. I mean, I'm sure he regrets what he did, but sometimes you know, endanger yourself and others, and there are consequences for that. So,
To me, it's apples and oranges, but worse on the crew side of those two specific incidents we're talking about.
They're both incredibly dangerous.
I'm not at all saying, by the way, just to put that out there, I'm not at all saying drinking and driving is not dangerous because it is horribly dangerous.
Mm-hmm. It's dangerous in a different way.
We don't know some of the surroundings based on the DUI, things along those lines.
Sure.
So, I mean, some of that might need to come out. It's a poor choice. It's a reckless choice, and it's a bad choice by that guy. The difference is that, you know, hitting somebody versus, you know...
I'm not trying to rank the two things. I'm just saying we had our own legal issue and it was a very serious legal issue. They're both very serious legal issues
they're incredibly serious.
I hope that Papa, you know, gets the punishment that he deserves for this because we should set an example in this league like we did at our team, you know, with our player, you know, that this kind of behavior is not acceptable and if you're going to be a professional athlete, then you should have a level of behavior that reflects back upon your city in a positive way, and he should
professional.
They should
is the
kick
key
him.
Word.
They should
not
kick him
trying,
off the team.
Not
I'd
at
kick
all
him
trying
off.
To defend him. Yeah. I'm just putting that out there, Greg.
Yeah, professional is the key word there, and the bottom line is that yes, you're a high profile person. You know, even if you're not playing in one of the big four leagues in this country, you're still known. People still follow you. People still look up to you, particularly kids. You know, you've got to think about an example that you're setting for them. You know, the fan base in Seattle, we tear into them many, many times over. But at the end of the day, they come out in huge numbers and they support the team. So this is a big deal for a player that gets a lot of exposure.
The biggest thing that I can't understand, and this is just me, is that if you have that much money, like if you're getting paid that much money, and this is the went back to the when I was working in Dayton in radio before I was really, you know, super, super, you know, following the crew. Mm-hmm. It was peripherally following them. You had to be aware of what was going on with the Bengals the entire time.
Sure.
And you have the Bengals players getting arrested for DUIs after going out to the club. if you have that much money, why are you not hiring a car service? Why are you not, you know, why are you not making the responsible decision in those situations? If you're going to go out to a club where you're going to go out and do whatever in alcohol is involved. Sam apparently has something to say.
Marco Papa actually gets paid a whopping $75,000.
Yeah, $75,000 is still enough to call a cab.
Yeah, but let's go back.
Yeah.
You can't. You don't know.
You can't Monday morning quarterback.
No. You don't know.
Like, I don't.
He doesn't know. He doesn't know because, look, that's what happens. I swore that I wasn't going to get into this, but this is what we live in. This is alcohol in soccer. This is the essence of what happens. Saturday night is dollar beer night at Crew Stadium.
Yep.
This is what we live in.
Yep.
This is the kind of this is the thing that you're going to get. And so now MLS has the opportunity to say to Marco Papa, you've made a big, big mistake. You made a big you made a decision. You made a big mistake. You have a problem. Yeah. Let's help you get right. Mm-hmm. Let's not do what they did with Hope Solo, which is throw her to the media and say, you know, she's good. And that's good enough. No, these people need help.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, you broke a law, so you have to pay for that. You know,
yep.
You pay for the crime that you committed, but you also need help. And this happens not just Marco Papa's one guy. There are going to be thousands of people over the course of the MLS season who go to the games, drink way too much. We see them all over. We see them every single game, get in their car in the parking lot and drive home.
Yep.
I am much more concerned about those tens of thousands of people who do that than I am about Marco Papa.
Yeah.
But it's all of a piece. And I think that's my concern.
I think that's why it's important that they set the example.
It makes me a little crazy. I'm a little upset.
It's indicative of U.S. sports in general.
Yeah.
In not even U.S. sports, but
it's indicative of our culture.
Yeah.
But this is an aspect of our culture that we can control, that we can impact, that we can say something about, we can do something about, we can make a choice. Do we want to take the money and promote this without thinking about it and saying this is yours, this is on you, or do we want to participate?
Yeah.
We want to say, no, this is a big problem. Let's figure out a way where this happens less.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think there's a lot of, and it's probably a good topic for another podcast just because timing-wise, but, you know, there are a lot of ways to try to fix that, whether or not it's trying to figure out a way to have people have safe rides home, or if it's a way to try to figure out a way to have people drink less at games. I mean, either one are legitimate conversations to have.
I think the problem is, and I mean, this is a much broader topic, but I mean, I know we were talking about the money earlier. I don't think it's a money thing. I think when you're talking about...
Of course it's a money thing.
Well, no. I don't think that's the reason that
not with Marco
people,
Papa, no.
No, I don't think it's a thing where... I'm saying with getting a ride or something like that, these people think, oh, no, I'm fine. Or they think, I don't care. And I'll roll the dice with it. And I'm rolling the dice not only with my life, but with the lives of who knows how many people who are sharing the road with me, assuming that, you know, this social pact exists where everybody's going to watch out for everybody else.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, it boils down a lot of it to selfishness. And I mean, I think that players like Papa, you know, they're saying, you know, okay, well, and I don't know why he did, but there's this kind of, I don't think you can fix it just by saying, oh, this person didn't have enough money to get an Uber home or something. It's more serious than that. And it's much harder to fix, unfortunately.
And I didn't mean that in the sense of, and I'm sorry if it came across that way, but I didn't mean that in the sense of, you know, oh, he's got money, whatever. Like, I'm just saying, like, I know that I've been here numerous amounts of times where I should not have driven home. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a car here. Mm-hmm. And I planned that out ahead of time, and then I took an Uber home, or I walked home, or I,
and look,
you know, sprinted home furiously, whatever, you know?
None of this is easy.
Yeah.
Like I said weeks ago, it is... This has been a very challenging, I guess, would be the best way to say it, season for me.
Yeah.
Because I really notice it. Being not having had a drop of alcohol all season because I'm I'm making a choice not to do it.
Yeah.
All I see when I go to Crew Stadium is that it is it surrounds you. It is everywhere you look, and people make a decision to do it.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. It's like I said, like a few weeks ago, it's miserable. It makes me not want to go to Crew games. Mm-hmm. And like yesterday when I saw that Saturday was dollar beer night, my first reaction was, oh God.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to go.
And it's dollar crappy beer night too. So, well, you know, that,
but
you know, who's going to,
it's like, it's who am I going to be around? It's not that, you know, you have a right to make money. You have a right to do all this stuff. You have a right to choose to do it. But I also have a right to say, I don't want to be around this game. And that sucks for me because look, I would put my Crew fandom up against anyone in the entire universe, in the history of the world.
Yeah.
But
of course
that makes me question whether or not I want to do it. But here's again, this is a good opportunity for MLS, for every team to recognize that one of your star players has done something bad, done something that's a tough decision. So how are we going to address this? Not just in his case, but in all of our cases. And again, I swore that I wasn't going to talk about this.
Well, I think that it's a good opportunity. If MLS were to take it and run with it, it's a good opportunity for MLS to have a responsibility discussion. It's a good opportunity for MLS to support that. You know, it's will they do it? No.
Well,
I don't think they will.
They might, because what they do is like they. It just depends on what level they're going to go to.
For instance,
when the, you know, there are times over the last few years where their players have said things on the pitch towards other players that are homophobic at best. You could describe them as that. They were downright hateful and horrible and obvious. And MLS stepped up. They did a very good job with the don't cross the line thing. Now the question is, what do you do when it's actually about ad revenue and sponsorships and people who are putting their logos on the stadiums and things like that. What do you do?
My point is that it's homophobia, things along those lines. It's a pretty easy path for MLS to follow because nobody is sponsoring MLS right now that's going to be like, no, we don't like the fact that you're anti-homophobic and you want to clean that up in your league, or racism, or things along those lines. There are no, from what I know, Orlando City might have somebody, but there's no racist sponsors in the league. I'm joking about the Orlando City thing, but
you go into the
buying beer thing. And it's a legit conversation to have, or liquor, or whatever else.
You're absolutely right. Like it is easier in terms of it being more.
It's a corporate ease.
Well, as the years have gone by, like you know, things have changed in that regard.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, there have been instances in the not too distant past where it was not, that sort of thing was not challenged by people who had an opportunity to do it, and you know it's always a challenge to do to take a stand against something like that, or to say, not even take a stand against it, just to step up and say we're going to work hard to address it, to make things different. Like I said, you make a choice to make things to change things, and this is our little portion of the culture that we control. So. Mm-hmm.
Two things. Number one, I don't think they're going to do much about it. CJ Sapong had a DUI earlier this season and was given a 3-game suspension. 3 games.
Wow.
Clint Dempsey was banned for how long? For ripping up a referee's book?
45 seconds.
Much longer than 3 games. I think they have this whole substance abuse program thing that they put players through, and then they come out and they're like, oh, well, they're better now. No, they're probably not. You know, you can't change behavior in, you know, a 4-hour mandatory lecture or whatever this thing is.
I honestly think that we look, that the people who run the marketing part of the Crew, of MLS, of every single team, look at it as though it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I think they look at it and they say, okay, hey, look, we got a beer sponsor. We have a craft beer sponsor. They're gonna. I think that they can't. it doesn't matter to them. Like, there's really no consequence to this kind of thing. No. That's their choice. That's absolutely their choice to make that decision. Maybe it hasn't affected them. Maybe the money is just too good, and the publicity and the visibility is just too good. Maybe it's, they look at it as an essential part of what their responsibility is to the cities that they're in.
Well, I
don't know, but that's where I'm, that's my observation. I look at it as like they, it doesn't matter.
I agree to a certain extent. I have a suggestion, actually. I don't know, you know, if anybody from the front office is listening. You know, I know, I, Justin, you don't drink at games. I also don't drink at games. I just like to keep my head clear when I'm at. I drink outside of games on occasion, but not at soccer games. And there aren't that many options if you want to drink. Your choices are drinking fountain, bottled water, which they will take the cap from, so that. If you're in Nordeca and you don't have a cap on your bottled drink, it's probably going to get knocked over in about 30 seconds of, you know, people running around in between the bleachers.
Or I roofie you, one of the two.
Well, yeah. But you have that, and you have Gatorade, and again, they're going to take the lid. So the options for drinks at Crew Stadium that are non-alcoholic are pretty limited. I would like to see them approach like a Rambling House or a place like that and get, you know, some of these craft sodas in there so that you have a non-alcoholic option. But then I can still be giving the Crew some money. You know, I can charge $8 for a sarsaparilla. I don't care. I'll drink it. It's right down the street from Crew Stadium. I mean, you can walk from Rambling House to Crew Stadium. So it would be like a local sponsorship. They could still have their kind of craft brew thing going on, but it's a non-alcoholic.
You're
option.
On to something, Alex, and I'm going to say copyright Alex Stanek. If you do this, Crew SC, give him money. I'm just saying, no, that's an amazing point, because you legit have Pepsi,
yeah,
water, Gatorade, coffee.
Coffee,
I had coffee one time at like a really, really cold game.
You can get coffee and hot chocolate during the cold games, and you can get Gatorade and water during the hot games.
Ashley Ignelzi was here earlier this season, and she gave us some
juice.
Yeah, I mean, having that juice available in the stadium even would be a great option, because, I mean, that stuff's great, too. So, give us some non-alcoholic options,
I think,
guys.
I think it's a great idea. Yeah. I mean, you can go into the bar and get a cranberry juice or whatever, but, you know, you pay through the nose.
You can do it. You can absolutely do it. You can go through the season without doing it, but
yeah.
But it's, you know, it's about what you're around.
Yeah.
You know, and again, you don't have to. It's difficult. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what else to say other than that.
No, fair enough. Well, we're gonna take a break. It's a good stopping point here. We will come back in just a second. We play Toronto on Saturday, so that's something to talk about. We won't talk about dollar beers. We already did that. But we'll be back in just a second. This is the Massive Report.
Thank you. Hi, welcome back to the Mass Report. This is Matt Gosher. I like the Mountain Goats. I like t-shirts, and I like beer.
You couldn't even do that right. Seriously.
No,
wow.
I went blank.
Wow.
I went
you are the Jerry Gurgich of this podcast.
It started out.
I don't even know who Jerry Gurgich
is.
Neither
do I. What is this?
It started out great.
Parks and Rec.
I have to say, it started out wonderfully.
Yeah. Well, I had this whole line, and then it just, like, my brain just cramped.
How does that feel?
It hurts a lot.
Can we announce our NASCAR podcast?
Oh, yeah. I would like to announce that me, Justin Bell, and I forget your name.
I'm Matt Gosher.
This is getting better and better.
This is way better.
So are you guys doing MR Pod after hours tonight? Are you guys doing after hours tonight with the NASCAR podcast?
We should.
It's actually Ben Gregson Jr.
Yeah, no, you guys are totally doing after hours tonight. All right, so screw that.
It's called a big old report, y'all.
Just
screw that.
Just restart this.
Listen to After Hours. No, we're not restarting. No. We do this straight through. We're not the Seattle podcast. And also, nobody sounds like they're in a bathroom. Anyway, so we're talking about Major League Soccer, .com, soccer's release the salaries for all the players. First million-dollar player, Justin, you got this one. Higuain.
Yeah, that's pretty good. No wonder he stuck around.
Yeah.
He's getting paid.
He's getting paid down in Garber bucks, but he's getting paid.
Cash is cash.
Yeah,
That is impressive that he got paid $1 million. I mean, I think that opens him. That opens up. I think that says something about what our ownership is willing to pay.
Yeah.
Or however it is that they divvy up money in this league.
Yeah.
That this is what they're willing to divvy up and give
Dartboards.
To a certain player. Yeah. So I mean, what would his brother get?
Why not both?
That's the first thing. $1 million. Yeah, you can pay Federico, what was it, 1.175?
Something like that, yeah.
If you can pay him 1.175, you can pay Gonzalo 2.175?
$1 million?
I don't know.
One more.
Yeah. So I thought that was good. And then the other thing, of course, was that Zeca was on the...
Yeah, what the hell was that?
I don't know.
I don't get what that was about.
I think it looked like everything had gone down to the point where it was truly a done deal. And that's why he ended up on the books. But
yeah.
Then it got back down.
Yeah, I think they submitted the paperwork on like a kind of a temporary basis, like a preliminary type of filing, and they hadn't taken it off by the time the numbers came out. But just some stuff about the numbers. Our total salary comes in about $5 million, which is much higher than it was last year, although a lot of that has to do with the fact that the CBA raised the minimum salary for a lot of the players and also raised the cap.
Yeah.
But in terms of our wages, in terms of the league, we're still towards the low end, I believe. Total salary for the crew is about $5 million, which is $2 million less than Kaká is earning by himself for our entire 28-man roster. And Toronto FC have two players on their roster who earn more than our entire roster combined. And if Jozy Altidore earned $100,000 more than he currently earns, they would have three players on their roster who earn more than our entire 28-man roster combined.
Where are Columbus Crew SC in the Eastern Conference?
Second.
We're second place.
And where are Toronto FC?
They're not that good at spending money, are they?
Not really. And where are Orlando City, for the record?
They're pretty low too.
Yeah.
But
I would still
take Kaká and Javinko on our team.
I know you would take Kaká.
You're a fanboy.
You take Kaká under the bleachers, but that's not what this
I would
is
give
about.
Kaká a piggyback ride all the way from Orlando to Columbus to bring him to the crew.
You're like...
He is my idol. I love Kaká.
Well, if there were soccer like conventions, you would cosplay Kaká. You would be the
Susie
of...
Absolutely.
He's cosplaying Kaká.
You'd be the
Susie
of like anime conventions, but with soccer players.
I am the Susie of Kaká.
I mean, seriously.
I am the Susie of Kaká.
Yeah.
It's a good way to put it. Matt, good job.
Yeah, Justin.
Well, I was going to say, like, when you look at the team that really stuck out to me was NYCFC. I mean, they have Frank Lampard, who hasn't played a single second for this team, is getting paid $6 million flat.
Seems legit.
Pirlo, $2,004,000 is his base salary.
You know about the four thing. You know about the four thing, right?
No.
Whenever there's a four or a divisible four or anything like that behind a player's salary, it's because it's divisible by 12, and they get paid monthly. And so it's easier. That's why when you see the weird.
That's good knowledge.
Yeah, it's somebody pointed that out to me the other day.
I thought he needed subway tokens from LaGuardia or something.
Yeah, but. that as well. That's not.
But see, like,
it's non-reported compensation is what we're talking about Greg.
So then right. Also on that team, David Villa getting paid $5,610,000. But Kwadwo Poku, who plays for NYCFC.
Does he?
$60,000.
What position so, like, is he? When you talk, serious question.
He's a midfielder.
Midfielder. Okay.
But when you you look at the teams as they're structured, you know, when you talk about like what you're saying, like
he was looking at me.
Yeah, when you look at the way that where these teams are on the table, there is that enormous separation between the teams. Between the players who play like right next to each other on the field,
yeah,
and how are you supposed to be able to compete? I don't. That's one thing that just escapes me all of the time. How is a team supposed to be able to function when someone is making $6 million playing right next to someone who's making $60,000?
It's not just that. It's also and we talked about this off the air before the show went on. All of those players that you mentioned, David Villa. Pirlo, guy I can't remember his name. I had to ask what position he plays. Giovinco, Jozy Altidore, Michael Bradley. How many of these guys play defense?
Yeah.
Well, we've seen. You watch highlights from the weekend. NYCFC completely taken apart by a New England Revolution team that has been pretty bad over the last couple of months. Defense was atrocious. Where is all of that money going? You know, I understand that it's not a glamour position. You know, you're not going to find your superstars who people are going to put on their bedroom walls. But it's kind of necessary, particularly in this league where there's so much parity. And we talk about the crew having defensive problems. But there's not such a gulf between what we're paying our forward guys and what we're paying our back line.
Here's one blunder. How many years has Brian Carroll been in the league?
Oh, wow.
All of the years?
14?
12?
12.
Brian Carroll's getting $150,000. He's playing right next to Maurice Adu, who's getting $700,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Adu's doing okay for him.
Speaking of Kaká, like, he's making $6,660,000. Base $7 million guaranteed. He's Rafael Ramos, who's I guess is his protege. I guess they get $50,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Of course. Well, so those guys hang out together.
And how accurate
he's making apprentice money.
Yeah.
How accurate these numbers are is a little bit up for debate as well. Merritt Paulson had tweeted at Jonathan Tannenwald when these numbers first came out because. Tannenwald, who's one of the Philly reporters, was kind of running through the numbers. He tweeted, "You're a journo and you believe those numbers? Come on, Jonathan," and put like a smiley face. And that stayed up for like a minute and then he deleted it. But
yeah, but
a lot of these
owner.
Numbers. I know, but that's the fact that it's an owner is interesting. And
Merritt Paulson, by the way, whose dad was the Treasury Secretary.
Hank Paulson. Yes.
Yeah, Hank Paulson, right before the. Almost depression that we had in 2007.
Yeah, now well, you know,
complaining.
Good on him. Yeah,
I thought it was Robert Paulson from Fight Club. Go figure.
Yeah,
but
both of them.
One thing that was interesting, going off of what Merritt Paulson said, is the numbers that are being reported for Pirlo are much, much lower than what was being reported in the news when he first signed in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
They were saying that he was going to earn between $8 and $12 million, and to see it reported now as what 2.1 is he listed. Is that his listed salary?
It's, yeah. It is 2.3.
Okay.
Is his guaranteed. But, yeah,
I think
you would imagine that he's probably getting paid something.
There are million-dollar options on that deal, I would have to imagine.
Of course.
For appearance is and probably also he's probably going to get a cut of shirt sales and stuff like that.
The other thing to keep in mind is that these are the union numbers.
Yeah.
And so these are what the union reports. And then...
Philadelphia Union?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. With, but the...
Or crew union.
But it's not what the MLS, what the league reports. And then, so the league, of course, is going to say... They have their own agenda for this.
Yeah, of course they do.
Yeah, it's, who knows? Per league policy, no one knows jack shit.
Damn straight.
Does anybody know even roughly what Greg Berhalter earns? Do we even have like a ballpark figure?
I don't think
we're
allowed to know that.
About 350.
I'm curious. I'm very curious to know what an MLS coach makes. And I have not been able to find anything. I looked online when these numbers came out to see if I could find Berhalter's numbers.
No, you
could
won't.
Find
you
them.
Won't find it. You
could,
won't figure it
I couldn't
it
find
out.
Bruce Arena. Yeah. I couldn't find anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should ask our friend Frankie Hittif.
Ziggy Schmidt gets paid in donuts.
He will tell you. Frankie will tell you, but then Clark Beacom will kill you. So
yeah, a true story.
I don't know if it's wise.
All right. So last thing we got to talk about in the show, Crew play Toronto this weekend. Give me your thoughts. We're going to start with Justin.
I think we're completely off the schneid. And
you were doing so well.
Full circle.
And we brought it right back.
Full circle, guys.
Thanks to Tony for reminding me to say schneid.
Schneid.
I think we're going to win this. I really do. I think I like the confidence that the team has gained. Even though those were two games against a pretty poor opponent, I like the confidence that we got, and I think we're going to win this.
All right, Alex.
Well, I've exhausted all of my correct predictions with the home and home double correct prediction, guys. Can I get another round of applause for that? Any chance? No.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Schneid. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Tony.
Thank you.
Who isn't even on this show.
No, but seriously, I think this is going to be a tough game. Sebastian Giovinco is really, really, really coming into form, and he's really starting to understand the system that they have, and he can change a game by himself. Without Bradley, without these guys, I still think they are incredibly dangerous. And Giovinco's the kind of guy who can hit you on the counterattack, and we're susceptible to counterattacks. And add to that the fact that, you know, he's not just able to get behind the defense, but he can then finish. And so I'm nervous about this game, much more so than I have been about basically any game we've played this season. So
fair enough. Greg, we played Toronto in the home opener, I believe it was. And it took a few games for Giovinco to get going. And there were a lot of people saying, oh, here's your new big money man, and he can't score, and he can't finish. Nobody's saying that now. Finally got selected to the All-Star team, along with Kai Kamara. Congratulations to those guys.
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about the All-Star team.
All-Star team.
Damn it.
Kai was left off, and then he got put on. Cool.
Kaká's captain.
Ethan's still off,
which is a bit off, but whatever. That's MLS.
Bullshit.
Giovinco does scare me. As Alex said, Columbus
is
very...
sacrificing a goat in the other room? I don't know what's going on over there. Anyway, continue, Greg.
It's bad. It's not pretty. It's terrible radio. Crew are very susceptible, as Alex said, on the counterattack, and Giovinco is the last guy that you want on the opposing team. However, to touch on what Justin said, they needed the confidence builder with the win in the home and home against Bridgeview. So I like the momentum that Columbus carries into this game because I think they're going to need it. But I think home field pays off. You know, Toronto does not seem to like coming here. Last year was a bit of an anomaly. They won a couple times up here. Or was it the one time? Whatever. They won once at least. But lately, Toronto hasn't enjoyed the trip. So this is a chance to take advantage of it. We've got a couple teams behind us in the East who have games in hand. Mm-hmm. So you got to keep winning.
All right, Greg, score prediction.
2-1 of the good guys.
All right, Alex.
Oh, man. I think we're going to really have our hands full with the Atomic Ant, Giovinco. I think he's going to cause us a lot of problems. He's going to be matched up with Chad Barson, more than likely. It'll be a really big test for Barson to see how he does. Can he keep pace with Giovinco? I think he does not keep pace with Giovinco, but I still think we win 3-2.
All right, Justin.
I think it's a goal explosion. I think both teams get off.
Goal explosion.
Both teams get off the schneid.
I like it. I like it.
And we win 5-4.
I do not think right, that word
Tony.
Means what you think it means.
Tony, you get to
totally
talk.
Doesn't.
You get to talk for half a second, Tony. Just a score prediction. You say anything else, I'm cutting your microphone off.
I'm going to say 3-1 Columbus. All right.
Fair enough.
False. All right. You always
say
4-0.
Can I mention that we're going to talk about the All-Star game, I'm sure, next week.
Yeah, we will. So, a bit more.
But I just want to note, I don't know if people know this, Landon Donovan's coaching the MLS homegrown team.
Oh, God.
That's awesome.
On next Tuesday.
Thanks, LD.
There you go.
Yeah, that'll be next week.
In fact, it's called the headline is Harry Ship, Shane O'Neill headline, Landon Donovan's 22-man Chipotle MLS homegrown game roster.
Oh, God. Justin, we had this conversation earlier. This is one of the many reasons why I drink, just so you know.
And there are two crew players,
yeah,
Matt Lampson and Ben Swanson.
Good for them.
So it's a 22-man roster, you said.
All right.
It was supposed to be 23-man, but Carnitas wasn't available.
Yeah. All right. Good job.
That's
there, Greg.
Excellent. I want to see good. A player named Carnitas so bad.
My prediction, it's going to be 3-1 to the crew again. And let's wrap this thing up. Sam, please hit the music because, oh, my God. For Morgan.
Damn it, that was the best.
For Sam, for Greg, for Justin, for Alex. For Tony, who just wandered in here like a drunk man off the street, my name is Matt Goshard. This has been another edition of the Massive Report. It's brought to you by Land Grant Brewing. Not only do all Canadians know which Tim Hortons they were at when Robin Sparkles went insane, they remember what donut they were eating.
Stewart's a whiner, and we got rookies, advertisers, like, let's say, Havilene, Target, Sharpie, Caterpillar, Nextel, Mountain Dew, DuPont, Lowe's, Home Depot, Kodak, M&M, UBS, Tidal, Tail, Gillette, Kellogg's, Viagra, DeWalt, and Budweiser. But the trophy girls still have my favorite parts. Vroom, vroom, vroom.
Yes, we do indeed. Welcome to a very special post Massive Report edition. I guess you could call this the big old report, y'all. Where we talk. If there's anybody who actually follows the Columbus crew and NASCAR, besides the three people sitting at this table, Greg Benson is my name, in case you weren't already aware, joined by Tony Galifo and Justin Bell, who has stuck around. Why is.
Alex is here.
Alex is here, too. He's just shaking his head in judgment. Judge not, lest ye be judged, Alex.
He does not know what he is missing.
Left turns. I'm missing left turns, Tony.
Which is funny, because you need to take a left turn if you were going to get up off the bar stool.
Oh. Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
Off to a good start.
We're off to a fantastic start. So something funny happened the other week. It wasn't this past weekend. Justin.
Yep.
You went and partook of NASCAR for the first time, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. The first
one
time.
Of us.
One of us.
Yeah,
indeed.
One of us.
What in tarnation, dare I say, prompted you to go and do this in the first place? Serious question. What brought this on?
My brother, Ben, was working at Polaris, and there was a guy who was also, he was in town working. They're building one of the shops over there, the new stores, and they decided to go on their night off, and they went to a go kart race. I'm not exactly sure where, somewhere in our vicinity, in our town. And the guy won. I think he got second, and so he won two tickets to the NASCAR race at Kentucky.
Nice.
And he didn't have anyone. He couldn't go because he was going to be out of town. Mm-hmm. So I gave him my brother, and my brother asked me if I wanted to go, and so we went.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you had never considered this before?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I didn't have a bias against NASCAR. Mm-hmm. I just it just never, it's kind of the thing that was there. I've seen races before.
Sure.
But it wasn't, it was new, completely new.
You got lucky because your race didn't actually rain out.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
It's worth mentioning that a couple of weeks before that, Tony and myself and a friend of mine had gone to Michigan.
Oh, really?
Where it rained quite a bit.
Apparently Michigan is a hotspot for typhoons. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, we actually got caught in one on the way out of the track after the race had been called after a two-thirds distance. Because they don't actually run in the rain. Don't know if anybody was familiar with that. I guess if you're listening past this point, you probably already know.
They were talking about like how much it was raining like that entire week.
Mm-hmm.
And then... It was because a beautiful day on Saturday.
It
absolutely
affects
beautiful.
The track a lot.
Yeah.
It really does in more ways than one. It's not just the fact that they can't race if it rains. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that if it's rained in the morning before the race, there's a lot of rubber that normally gets put down in practice and qualifying and all that. That gets washed away. That changes the grip level. That it's changes like, the way the car handles. Everything. And it's a sport of inches and tiny little adjustments where the slightest thing, and I don't know how much research you did on this or how much you knew about it before you went. Right.
Absolutely. I knew, like, there are certain things, of course, like, you know, if you live in the United States, you know certain things about NASCAR, right?
Sure.
You know the names of drivers, you know locations of things, but, like, all the details and things, those are not things that I was... complete at all aware of, to be honest.
Right. Well, while you and I were talking off the air, actually the three of us, we were sort of you were name dropping a little bit of, you know, hey, I've heard of this particular place. Right. What's that track in Alabama? And who's this guy? And what's that, you know, all this sort of stuff. Talladega.
Yep, I learned that.
That's
today.
Where it is. People know this, and even when this discussion went around the rest of the room here at Hendox, people knew the names of tracks. Oh, you guys are planning on going to Bristol? Yeah, I know where that is. Or,
yeah,
I have a vague idea. I've heard of it. Yeah. You know,
I can name almost everyone, and I'm ashamed of this.
Bristol's a night race, right?
Bristol.
See, I knew that.
They have
Bristol,
a day race.
They have a day race and a night race.
Yes. Okay. So they go there twice
places,
a year.
Right. Yeah, there are a couple places that they do. Actually, it's a few of them now that they have multiple races.
Cool.
And sometimes they'll run a day one, sometimes a night one. Or sometimes they'll just do
Dover
two in the day.
Dover does not need two races.
That's another debate for another time. But the weird thing, see, for me, growing up in a country that is not this one, let's just put it that way, you do see NASCAR on the TV every so often. It's something that was so completely American.
Mm-hmm.
It's got its roots in the Deep South. It's something that's hardly done anywhere else in the world. Certainly, I mean, oval track racing in general is an American thing. But the pomp and ceremony and the pageantry of NASCAR and the flyovers and the military salutes beforehand and the invocations praying before the start of a race, you know, we can have another conversation about that, but we won't. It's all super American. It encompasses everything that is. And as a kid who grew up watching America on the TV from so many different angles and falling in love with the country, I think that's what endeared me to it first place. This was part of the country that I wanted to be in.
That's so cool. I mean, I knew that you guys were fans, but I didn't really understand that, like that what you just said. I didn't understand that until I was actually like in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm. I just became a fan because I like cars going fast.
That's a cool thing.
And that's how a lot of kids get introduced. I mean, that's how I got into auto racing in general. My dad was a big gearhead and he worked on cars all the time.
I mean, you see like little kids like, you know, a lot of little kids like wrestling and you know, and that's, but NASCAR was my wrestling as a kid. Like I loved it. I mean, I watched every race every weekend with my grandpa. We went to Pocono when I was a kid. 1999, saw Bobby Labonte, who was my favorite driver at the time, win that race, and it was fantastic. It's one of my favorite memories ever. And I got to meet Tony Stewart that weekend, which we will not talk further about Tony Stewart this segment.
There's a track just outside of Melbourne, and it's basically the only NASCAR spec oval track in Australia. Mm-hmm. And one of the only ones outside of the U.S. in the world.
Mm-hmm. Except for that track in Japan.
There's a couple in Japan, there's one in Austria, there's one in England.
Yes.
But they're scattered. Yeah. They're very much scattered. And Australia has the what they call the Calder Park Thunderdome.
Yeah.
And they rent, because Thunderdome, Mad Max, why the hell not?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And to make matters worse, they
two
rent
drivers in there, one
leaves. That's pretty much all they could afford to compete there, because it was, I mean, it's a big money sport. But in one of the worst stereotype examples that you've ever seen, they ran a separate series there. They did run an Australian version of NASCAR, and they actually had a couple of
wasn't it called like Oscar?
It was called Oscar.
Oscar. Whoa. Oh my god.
It was called that Oscar. Awesome. And guess what? The wheels were on the right side of the car and they went around the track clockwise.
Wow. That's incredible.
I kid you not, because apparently we have to beat these stereotypes to death about
No, wait. But, no, I was actually so wasn't it called Oscar?
It was called Oscar, yes.
Okay, okay.
That's true, yeah. But yeah, they ran a couple of exhibition NASCAR races in Australia.
I think Bobby Allison won one.
Bobby Allison did win one, and Neil Bonnet, I think, won the other one. But yeah, they brought a whole bunch of guys down. Richard Petty came down. I think Dale Earnhardt came down. You know, all of these guys. And again, you're nodding, Justin, yeah, as I say these, rattle off these names. These are household names, not just in the South, because you look at the last like 10 NASCAR seasons and who's won the championship, you might find one driver from Dixie in there.
Yeah.
Jimmy Johnson's won six of them. He's from California. Jeff Gordon's from Indiana. Tony Stewart's from Indiana.
I thought we weren't going to speak of him.
Well, we did, apparently.
Yeah.
Tony Stewart's from Indiana. You look at the other big
Brad
name.
Brad Keselowski from Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also,
Kurt and Kyle Busch from Nevada.
Yeah,
you know all of these guys. It's expanded.
Oscar the Grouch.
Oh,
that's
keep
a good
working
one.
On it.
Wait, the fact that you
mentioned it at all.
Wait, before you continue, I just want to say I want to remember this right now to tell you need to go home and watch on Netflix the Tim Richmond 30 for 30 documentary.
Oh, I know who that is.
He is a local NASCAR legend from Ohio.
He was
and
from, yeah.
It's a fantastic but also very tragic story.
Yeah, I saw
Born and raised in Ashland.
Hashtag justice for Tim Richmond.
Yeah, no that's kid. One of the cool things though, is like you're talking about like the stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, I remember when I was very, very little, growing up in Iowa, my dad's uncle, so they were much older than I was, they would watch NASCAR on the Sun. And it was always like the big races, right? Daytona.
Yep.
Talladega, Darlington, Bristol.
Yeah, the names that I would remember were... Yeah, they didn't have like a Grand Slam at one time.
They did.
And
they
so like the names
NASCAR
that I remember them racing...
kind of has that. It's like the four big races are Darlington, Daytona, the Brickyard, and well, there's always a third debated race. Is it the
way
Bristol
that it used,
Night Race, or is it
the way that it used to always be? It was the richest, the Daytona 500.
Yes,
it was the longest, the Coke 600 in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
It was the I can't remember.
Southern
500 in Darlington was one of the biggest ones as well.
Yeah,
because that's in NASCAR's heartland.
There is
a road course in California. There's one in New York as well.
What was the original road course? Riverside.
Riverside.
And then now it's Sonoma in a wine country.
Yep.
But I remember the names of those guys. Like Bobby Allison was one. Mm-hmm. Richard Petty. Mm-hmm. Cale Yarborough was the name that I always loved that name.
Cale Yarborough. Yes.
And so like at the track on, I should kind of set the scene, right? So we went down to Kentucky. We were literally three rows from the track.
Mm-hmm.
And like less than 100 feet from the track.
Yep.
And so I, you know, we were talking about like we didn't really know any of the people, like mm-hmm. we knew their names and stuff, but like you know, so I made a joke. It's like I'm going to root for Cale Yarborough, and I think people kind of thought that was funny. But what happened was that was really cool was that as they were introduced the racers, you started to get the sense that like the crowd, and there were 150,000 mm-hmm. people there. It was enormous.
Yeah,
and they had been there like this was a huge thing for them.
Yep,
and. They had allegiances, but they also kind of rooted for everybody except for Kyle Busch. They hate Kyle Busch. They hate him.
There's
with
always
a white-hot
been
passion.
There's always been at least one driver.
He is the bad guy.
Everyone's got the driver. Jeff Foxworthy said this in a stand-up bit once. Everyone's got the driver they love and the driver they hate, and the driver they hate is almost always the same guy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That seems like what it was because when he was introduced, they booed him.
I do.
But like Dale Earnhardt Jr. is like this
god.
He is like this. Yes, something yes.
No, 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 no
what it's like. It's like they look at him like he's a savior.
Yep.
And he's supposed to be the one who's basically fighting off Kyle Busch. Mm-hmm. There was moments during the race where Dale Earnhardt Jr. was never in. He was never in.
He was never in contention.
In the contention of the race. Yeah, right. He seemed like he was always off.
Yeah.
But there were a few moments where he was like racing with Kyle Busch a little bit, like off of a caution or something.
Yep.
And the crowd was so into it.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it was. It's hard to kind of quantify what how that was. I've never quite seen anything like it, where like they were jumping up and just kind of like go go go. And even like any when they would always get like there'd be a caution and so they'd bunch up. And it'd be like three wide across the track. And it was, there was an intensity there in the crowd that is hard to describe. I just put it that way.
When those two guys are in proximity of each other, those your favorite and your least favorite.
Right.
Yeah. When those two guys are side by side, one of my favorite moments in my life, not just races that I've attended, 2009 Daytona 4th of July race.
Yes, that's one of my favorite races ever.
Your eyes lit up, Tony, when I'm talking about this. Kyle Busch was hated even back then.
Why is he hated, by the way?
Here's
because
the thing.
Because he's flashy. He doesn't fit in with the blue-collar crowd of the NASCAR fan base.
That makes sense.
Which, to go back to Tim Richmond earlier, is one of the reasons that he was not well-liked. Because Tim Richmond was... He was not one of these good old boys, and this is we're talking mid-80s here, when NASCAR is still
very much... They called him Hollywood.
Right, when NASCAR is still very much a Southern thing, it's still, you know, it hasn't quite broken out of its, you know, its enclave yet. Mm-hmm. And Tim Richmond is a guy who is born in an industrial city in Ohio. He's born into money. His parents are in manufacturing. They've got a wealthy, you know, they've got a good business. They're well-to-do. They basically bought him his first race car.
That's so interesting.
And started to put him through.
Because, like, when I'm watching, I'm sitting there watching this, and the money is just everywhere. Like, how much... These guys,
NASCAR,
like, these cars are
is the
so
perfect
incredible.
Example of capitalism in the United
it looks
States.
So,
everything has a sponsor.
Like, the pits,
did you not hear the list of sponsors in the intro?
Right.
Yeah.
The
exactly.
The pits look pristine. Like, you can see into the infield, and like they've got garages set up, and you can just see like this $1 million semi trucks lined up. Where I mean, it's really incredible. But the crowd,
I know people
is so it's like the crowd is. It's working class.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, and that's one of the reasons why I really, like, I was so just into it. I was like, this is basically where I grew up in Iowa and Ohio, but it also has this kind of Southern aspect to it, being in Kentucky. And it is so working class, but they look at these guys, they identify with them, even though these guys are just $1 million athletes.
Like, which is why the blue collar guys were so popular, especially
back in the day.
And when Tim Richmond comes in, and Tim was one of the few guys who didn't live. Most of these teams and drivers are based in the Charlotte area.
Okay,
yeah,
so
Concord,
almost all
North Carolina,
Concord, you know, all of these, you know, basically anywhere within 20 miles of Charlotte is where pretty much all of the teams. Mooresville, North Carolina, is dedicated to NASCAR. Even the,
and all
even
these
the
drivers are like neighbors
are
too.
Right. They all live in this little community. Tim Richmond, meanwhile, is living in New York City in a penthouse apartment because he can afford to. And he even said in interviews, he's like, look, I'm making good money doing what I'm doing. And if I could have a choice between living the life of luxury in New York or, you know, living the simple life in North Carolina, I'm going to take the sky-high penthouse every single time.
Huh. Right. Get back to the 2009. Yeah.
Get back to 2009 real quick, and then we'll wrap this up here in a few minutes.
Try to
2009. Kyle
we
Busch
might have a green white checkered on this one.
2009. Kyle Busch does not lead the entire race. Dale Earnhardt Jr. goes out early, by the way, in a big wreck.
Okay.
Yeah.
So most of the fans who are there, because it's like watching a Gold Cup game when Mexico is playing.
Yeah.
They're almost all going for this one particular guy.
Yeah.
So he's out early, and now the only rooting interest that these guys have is they do not want Kyle Busch to win. It doesn't matter who else wins.
Wow.
You know, they'd rather see a Chevy win because Junior drives a Chevy. They got brand loyalty, and I'll get back to that in a second. But they don't want Kyle Busch to win. So he leads the penultimate lap of the race. comes Tony Stewart coming to the checkered flag out of the final turn of the race. Tony Stewart makes a move on him. Kyle Busch comes across to block him, basically puts himself into the wall. Tony Stewart goes on to win the race, and Kyle Busch winds up getting caught in a huge wreck behind him. Every single person, myself included, were going absolutely ballistic because my driver wasn't in contention either. I just did not want him to win.
That's so amazing.
And it's a rooting interest. It's almost like we put it into a soccer perspective. Like, think of your least favorite team. It doesn't matter whether it's MLS or, you know, any particular league in the world, whether, you know, it's Western Sydney Wanderers for me. I don't care if they're playing my ex-mother-in-law. I still want them to lose.
That's so interesting. Like, that was the vibe that I got from being in the crowd. And, you know, the thing that really captured me was just, like, the all-encompassing sensory overload of the entire thing. Mm-hmm. And that was partially from being on the track, very, like, right at the start and finish line. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost indescribable how much sound is put out by those 43 cars on that track.
Yeah.
Or in the preparation as it ramps up, and it's very simple. There are some little, like, you know, they'll have videos before the games, and, like, mm-hmm. they'll have the cameras walking through the crowd, taking pictures of the shot of the, or taking shots of the crowd and stuff like that. But it's also very much about that competition, mm-hmm. and, like, mm-hmm. the car that I kept watching, I kept noticing throughout the race was Brad Keselowski.
Mm-hmm.
He stood out. I think he had won the pole going into that, so he mm-hmm. started on the first row. But he would come in, and like the whole strategy of pitting and all that stuff was incredible to watch him for, like, the entire scope of the track. But he would come in, pit, and then he'd be back, so he'd be like in 18th place.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seemed like on every lap he'd move up. Every lap he'd move up.
Yep.
And then he'd be in 7th. And then he'd be right behind Jeff Gordon, and you'd watch them like racing around the track, and Jeff Gordon trying his hardest to hold off mm-hmm. Brad Keselowski, and he couldn't do it. And it was just that car and that driver, and you could really get the sense of, like, this is a guy really putting it all out there on mm-hmm. the line to get, and he'd get back into second place, and then he'd get right behind Kyle Busch, and just Kyle Busch was so freaking good.
Yeah.
And you'd see,
that's the other reason I don't like him, is
yeah,
he's good.
You would see the crowd just be like, and then of course Kyle Busch wins,
yeah,
and everyone's like, all right, you know, and they clap, and then they boo, and then they clap.
Right.
So it was, yeah, it was phenomenal.
Guys, we got to wrap this up, but I get the feeling we're not done. I get the feeling there are other races on the calendar, so yes. to speak. We will pick this up again very, very soon, I'm sure. Tony, final thoughts?
I would just like to say, for any liberal NASCAR well-educated fan out there, we're all here. We do exist.
We are among you.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's the thing, right? It's like, I just want to take it aside. Like, I am about the most lefty person you can imagine.
Yes.
I showed up, you know, with my long hair and my, you know, everything. And it was amazing. Like, yeah. You saw pictures of me. I looked like I didn't belong, but I, you know, rolled up my sleeves, put on a hat,
yes.
and Ray-Bans.
As Tony said, the articulate, well-spoken, liberal NASCAR fans are among you, and one of them's an immigrant.
Yeah, but I love the people at the race, amazing, absolutely yeah. amazing. They wanted to talk to you, like, you know, they were involved, and they were like, you know, hey, buddy, you know. This
NASCAR crowds really cool. are great.
It was yep. super awesome.
I mean, political affiliation aside, they yeah, are some aside, of who cares? They That's, are some yeah. of the nicest people, like sober or drunk, because they're just
real.
There to just, like, watch these cars just speed around a track at 200 miles an hour, and it's an amazing, like, technological achievement yes. that they can do these with these, like, bare-bone cars.
There are a lot of things that I love about this country, and that's one of them.
Yes.
Guys, thank you very much for your time, and we will pick this up again, I am sure. For Tony Galifo, Justin Bell, the Stanix, who are here looking on in judgment, not really, maybe. My name is Greg Benson. Thank you for listening. This has been another edition of Massive Report Plus One. Good night, everybody. Vroom, 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 I love NASCAR. I like short tracks, you'll see more wrecks, and about a million screaming rednecks, and old Jeff Burton, poor Mike Skinner, well, they've done forgot what it's like to be a winner.
And Ken Schrader still ain't sure who his sponsors are.